You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers. A dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends. A place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free. And things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it, no matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Thanks for joining us here for hour two. Our guests this evening are going to be Dr. Robert S. Bobrow, and he'll be on hand to talk to us about his new book, The Witch in the Waiting Room, which is an amazing book. You'll definitely want to stick around for that. We also have Reverend Daniel R. Jennings, who is an author, and he's coming out with his book, The Supernatural Occurrences of John Wesley. We'll be talking to him about that as well. But before we get involved in that, I've got a great little guest on with us this evening. He's going to be on here for the first few minutes to talk about it. He's one of our new sponsors, and he's a friend of the show. His name is Russ Clark, and he is of Russ Clark of PowerHypnosis.net. Russ, thanks for joining us here.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dave.
Appreciate having you. Now, the reason that we asked you to be on this this evening, talk a little bit about what you do is, you know, I believe in finding alternative ways to help people, and medicines and drugs don't always do it. And I came to Russ myself with a problem I have had, and as many of you have heard of, we've talked on the shows in the past about the negative chatter I always have going on in the back of my head, and that just drives me crazy. I know it helps to keep me from excelling and doing a lot of things in life that I've wanted to get to. So I talked to Russ, and he was able to actually come up with a program for me to help build my confidence and boost my esteem so that that negative talk starts to go away. So I'm just starting into that program, so we'll be keeping you updated on that. I'm sure Tim will be letting you know as my head seems to swell and not get through the doors as easily as well. But Russ also helps out with quite a few other things. Russ, why don't we talk a little bit about what you can do with hypnosis and how can you do hypnosis for people that are not living right near you?
Well, it's an interesting thing, hypnosis. A lot of doctors are getting into it also to help with pain management. There's actually been case studies for cancer patients using hypnosis to quell the pains of chemotherapy. You know, we do offer programs. Everybody knows the classic, you know, stop smoking, lose weight. We do that. We have pain management program. We also have...
Do you have anything to make me feel like I have more hair on my head?
More hair on your head?
Yeah, is there any way to hypnotize me to grow hair?
We could do a new program.
All right.
And Russ, I'd like to feel more like a natural woman. You have anything for that?
We do have something that we can offer you, Tim, especially for you, but you'll have to drink lots of goat's blood.
Excellent.
Yes. Well, see, it's good. Russ is actually willing to work with you. And actually, that's what I do like and appreciate about you. You can do specialized programs for people as well, correct?
Yeah, we can. One of the interesting things, you know, people like to break habits, but also we're going to be working on a phobia package. But we can also do telephone sessions cure phobias, believe it or not, and it really takes like less than 15 minutes and has a very high success rate. You know, really the whole point behind all of this is to help people the best we can without making outrageous claims. And does hypnosis work for everybody? No, it really depends on your commitment to the program and actually listening to whatever CD that you choose to listen to.
And your
so
want
Dave,
for change,
to
right?
Your CD. What's that?
And you have to want to change. You can't listen to a stop smoking CD if you really don't want to quit, but you're doing it to just quell your friends and relatives, right? You've got to do this because you want to make a difference and a change in your life.
Absolutely. It's like anything else that you do. I mean, if you want to lose weight, you can take pills and it's not going to do it. You've got to make a commitment to yourself. Basically, what hypnosis does is it passes the conscious mind, goes to the subconscious mind, and it allows the suggestions to reframe the subconscious mind to allow the change to be easier for you. Is it the answer for everybody? No. But I've seen startling results. I've seen people go into one live session and they never smoke a cigarette again. I've seen people go into a group session and 50% of them are smoking right after the session. You know, so it is a commitment, and you have to want to make that change. And with any kind of reprogramming system, which is what this is, to break a habit, it's a well-known scientific fact. It takes 21 days of restructuring through listening to a CD or listening to any kind of session that's designed to change a habit. You've developed these habits over years and years and years. You're not going to do it overnight.
Well, we will definitely keep people abreast of how I feel my sessions are going, and I do recommend that you go give Russ a look. You can check out his website at powerhypnosis.net. We'll have a link up on our site so that you can click that and go over there. And if you want help with the conventional things, stop smoking, losing weight, gain confidence, release stress, increase memory. He also has programs on insomnia and conquering phobias. If you'd like to talk to Russ, you can get more information about him at his site at powerhypnosis.net, or you can click on the link directly from our website. Russ, thanks for joining us here for the beginning of the show, and I appreciate you helping to sponsor our show and keep us going.
Hey, Dave, thanks for having me. And Tim, you guys keep on keeping on. I love the show.
Will do. Thank you, buddy. Welcome to the Darkness on the Edge of Town this evening, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back in a few moments where we'll be talking to Dr. Robert S. Bobro about his book, The Witch in the Waiting Room.
Once you have seen Dave and Tim in the light, you'll understand why we must return to the Darkness on the Edge of Town. Stay tuned. There is more to come.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough. With Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to TraceMinerals.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace.
Jeff Rusterholz with Edina Realty understands that the housing market is changing, and he's prepared to work with you to put together an aggressive plan to ready your home and help you sell quickly. It's Jeff's goal as your full-service real estate agent specializing in the Twin Cities to provide you with superior service at all times. His local expertise and extensive real estate experience will benefit you whether you're serious about buying or selling a home. By taking time to really listen to your needs and desires, Jeff Rusterholz with Edina Realty will help you find the home of your dreams. And if you're selling a home, his real estate expertise and many effective marketing programs will give you the exposure and edge you need to sell your home quickly and for top dollar. Jeff prides himself on providing unparalleled service, and he looks forward to developing a long-term relationship with you. Visit him online at movewithjeff.com for more details, or call 651-690-8479 to get started on securing your future. That number again, 651-690-8479.
Do you want to take charge of your life? We all have our demons we want to get rid of. This is Russ Clark. My hypnosis CD series will help you take charge of your life and kick those demons out. Thousands of people have made personal improvements through the power of hypnosis. Your success is guaranteed by me, or I will refund 100% of your investment. To kick those demons or to add relaxation into your life, visit my website, www.powerhypnosis.net.
If you read Taxpayer Mag every month, you'll be able to tell the difference between the absurd.
Could not go to work because Bigfoot stole my car.
And the creepy. Taxpayer Mag takes you where few would ever go on purpose. From exclusive interviews with the cast of the ghost hunters, to the latest trends in technology, the field of the paranormal. To join our journey, order at tapsparamag.com.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at traceminerals.com. Feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to traceminerals.com and feel the difference minerals make.
Ghosts, goblins, witches, creatures of the night. Yep, that just about covers everybody Dave and Tim have ever dated.
Oh my God, this girl's really turning me on.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Again, we'd like to thank Russ Clark for just joining us a few minutes ago to talk to us about his hypnosis. We'd also like to thank our guest for the first hour of the evening that we just had with us. That was J. Allen Danilek with his book, The Case for Ghosts. Right now, though, we've got another gentleman on the phone with us, author of another book. His name is Robert S. Bobrow, M.D., and he is an ex-guest for this evening. And he's the author of a book called The Witch in the Waiting Room, A Physician Investigates Paranormal Phenomena in Medicine. So this is a pretty amazing book. I was able to get the copy of it a couple weeks ago and have perused it. It's really an interesting little read. I'd like to welcome to the show Dr. Bobrow. Good evening, sir.
Thank you, Dave. Thank you for having me.
I appreciate you coming on the show with us. Now, what got you interested in the paranormal to begin with, you know, in a medicinal way?
Well, I'm a family practitioner, which is a generalist position, which means I'm interested in everything. And the more unusual a case was, the more I tended to notice it. For instance, if you smoke cigarettes, you're half as likely to get Parkinson's disease. That's just something I would take notice of because it seems to be the opposite of...
Let me hear that again.
If you smoke cigarettes, you're half as likely to get Parkinson's disease. In other words, it's the opposite of what we usually believe about cigarettes, namely that they're always bad for you in every way.
Wow.
Or okay. Another article, if you donate blood, you're much less likely to ever have a heart attack. That's just an unusual thing that catches my eye. Or that ulcers could be caused by germs and cured by antibiotics.
Really?
Well, that's now Nobel Prize winning research from out of Australia. Barry Marshall won a Nobel Prize a few years ago for discovering that. But nobody believed him until he actually had to swallow some germs himself, get sick, get an ulcer, and then cure himself with antibiotics. That's how difficult it is to get the medical profession to accept something that looks a little different.
Now, you are, as you just mentioned, you're a general practitioner, you're an actual working doctor, and you're not some kooky witch doctor out there or you know, healing with crystals and things like that. I mean, you've got an actual practice to
begin with. I'm a very conventional practicing physician. I don't even do alternative medicine to any extent. I vaccinate children. I take bugs out of people's ears. I treat colds, allergies, anxiety, depression, that sort of thing.
I've got a couple of people I'd like you to take bugs out of their butt. Can you do that for us?
Sorry, there's a long waiting list for that.
And just let me mention, I didn't mean to clump everybody together like if you use crystals, you're a kook, but I just mean I'm just trying to get across the point. You're not just a self-proclaimed doctor who just, you know, is out there healing people because you say you can. You're an actual doctor doing these things and learning more about alternative forms of medicine.
The patients who see me have no idea that I have any interest at all in the paranormal.
Okay.
I'm that conventional a physician. At any rate, along with collecting the articles that I just mentioned to you, I also clipped out something from the Journal of the American Medical Association about an American nurse who contracted a disease called lupus, which can be very serious and was in her case.
Mm-hmm.
She failed therapy in the United States. She needed higher and higher doses of cortisone, and her kidneys were still failing. So in desperation, she went back to the Philippines, where she had been born, saw a witch doctor, returned to the United States 3 weeks later, and her lupus was quite gone. And her American physician wrote this up because he had all the data and had it published in the Journal of the American Medical Association.
Now, with what occurred with that, do you think it was the ooh-ee-ooh-ah-ah, or the ting-tang-walla-walla-bing-bang that cured her?
Well, the physicians... Well, if we knew that, then it wouldn't be paranormal. You know,
just
it would
messing
just
with
be
you.
Science.
Sure. So she went over there. She met with this witch doctor and came back, and within a few weeks was completely cured of lupus altogether?
Yes. The witch doctor claimed that he had removed the curse placed upon her by a spurned suitor. The American doctor made no claims of knowing what happened, except to say that it would be very unlikely that her lupus would just go into remission just like that. And he had data, including a kidney biopsy beforehand, to document the lupus. So he just wrote it up as a piece of data and made no claim as to how it happened.
Well, now, you being a doctor, you'll understand more. So did it actually cure her completely of lupus, or did it just put it back into remission?
It seemed to cure her completely because he followed her for 4 years afterwards, including through a pregnancy, which generally would tend to exacerbate lupus.
Okay.
And at least over the ensuing 4 years, and even under the physiologic stress of a pregnancy, her disease had only a trace or two to be remembered by.
Hmm.
So it wasn't a brief thing.
Sure.
Another interesting case I noticed, just along with noticing interesting cases, was that of a British housewife who had no history of mental illness, but one day heard voices inside her head, as if people were talking,
mm-hmm.
telling her very specifically that she had a brain tumor and that she needed a CAT scan and where she should go for it. And this was written up by the psychiatrist in England to whom she was ultimately referred, which is where most of the patients wind up. And in fact, most of the reports that I took for my book were filed by psychiatrists, who decided to humor her and order the CAT scan. And sure enough, the voices were exactly right.
Hmm.
She had a tumor just where they said it would be. He writes this up again from the point of view, I watched this happen, I can't explain it. So if you look for cases like these in the medical literature, in other words, in journals that doctors read, that textbooks essentially are drawn from, you can find enough of them to make a book, which is what I did.
Can I ask your opinion on this now? You know, we've been hearing for years and centuries that, you know, the power of the mind is amazing. And people have actually been able to cause lesions or wounds on their body simply by thinking about it, a psychological thing. Do you believe that more of this is not so much witchcraft or magic or things of that nature, but more of the mind? This witch doctor was able to convince her that this was what it was, and he removed that problem from her, and her mind was able to release and heal herself?
That's certainly a possibility that the mind is powerful. I'll give you an example from my book.
Please.
Now, I use the term paranormal rather loosely to encompass things that we just don't understand. So in addition to traditional paranormal things like witches and ghosts, I also included things like acupuncture and hypnosis, just to the extent that certain aspects are not well understood. So, the case I wanted to tell you about was published in the American Journal of Clinical Hypnosis, and it concerned a Canadian dentist who needed to have his gallbladder removed. And this was before they did it with laparoscopy and little slits. This is when they made an 8-inch incision and sliced open your abdomen. He wanted to hypnotize himself and use that as the anesthesia for this major abdominal surgery. And ultimately, he was able to convince the hospital to allow him to do it. And while fully awake, conscious, and comfortable, and able to converse with nurses, he hypnotized himself and had his gallbladder removed quite painlessly. And
right, well, I'm hearing more and more of that being used, where people are using hypnosis for going to the dentist, for one thing, which is something I probably should do. But you know, to have surgery and have these things worked on and taken care of. So it is, I mean, that is seeming to unlock something in the mind that's blocking these pain receptors.
Well, this fellow was a dentist, and he actually became interested in clinical hypnosis when he was in the military and was able to use hypnosis to do dental work and found that it relieved pain. So he became more interested in it through its its dental usefulness, but ultimately used his mind to allow his body to be cut open quite painlessly. So that's obviously a fairly powerful effect of the mind over the body, even though your average person who needs their gallbladder out is not going to be able to harness that kind of energy.
Yeah, that's unreal.
But when you know that someone can do it, then you realize there's some mechanism for it, which we don't fully understand.
Well, isn't that in a sense what they try to do with, like, the Lamaze method for birth? Is it's focusing the woman's attention on her breathing more than on the pain, which is helping her to push the baby out without needing
to some extent,
the drugs?
It gives you confidence. It makes you an active participant in the procedure rather than a passive sufferer. You know, it makes you interactive and proactive and helps.
Okay.
You know, for reasons that are not 100% understood.
Now, going back in history, how long have these alternative methods been used? And if they've been so effective, why does medicine turn away from them?
Well, they may be a little bit, and they do reach back into history, as you say. Mm-hmm. They may be a little bit inconsistent in the results that you obtain. You give a shot of penicillin to 100 people with pneumonia, assuming it's a susceptible kind, they'll all get better. Whereas hypnosis, witchcraft, even acupuncture, faith healing, they're not as predictable, for one thing. And then for the other thing is physicians don't like to hear what they can't explain. Things that doctors don't understand, they often find repellent. It's some combination of a challenge to their authority and something that just confuses them.
Hmm.
So a lot of unusual cases don't get written up or don't get much attention because doctors, in a sense, aren't interested. There was a case of a child who recovered from leukemia back in the 1950s when the disease was 100% fatal.
Right.
And the physician at Harvard who took care of her never wrote the case up, and he was asked why. And he said, you know, people would have gotten annoyed with him if he had done so. I had met a patient in a clinic at which I was working who had had breast cancer 17 years earlier and declined all medical care. Should have been dead, but somehow survived pretty well unscathed. Only the breast that had the cancer had kind of eaten itself away, but stopped at her chest wall for some unknown reason. When she walked into this clinic to be seen, which was a county clinic at which a number of doctors worked, none of the other doctors wanted to see her.
Mm-hmm.
I wound up seeing her because, to me, she was an interesting case. To me, this is a case that doctors should want to see. How did it happen? How did you do it? Yet she was shunned by many of my colleagues because she didn't follow the rules, medically speaking.
Okay.
And that's what you're up against.
Now, have you worked with witches in the past? I mean, to get ideas on how to do this? Have you done
a bunch
of... Okay.
Where the title comes from,
right.
Again... I have a very conventional practice.
Mm-hmm.
My patients have no idea that I have any interest in this. And the interest started recently when I had collected a few articles that included the paranormal and just took the paranormal ones, put them together into a presentation at the medical school at which I teach, and found it was surprisingly well received that I pursued it. Once I pursued it, I started to ask a few questions and be told things that people knew I was interested in, so they told me. The first thing that happened was, and this had happened years earlier, in my local newspaper I read that a patient of mine was being sued by her husband for divorce and custody of their child because she was a witch, literally.
Hmm.
He claimed, according to his lawyer, he would be awakened in the middle of the night, she would be robed and chanting and unresponsive to him. To me, she was a completely normal, pleasant young woman.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen her in years, but someone I knew to be an acquaintance of hers is still a patient of mine. And when I started to write the book, I asked this acquaintance about it. And she said it may have been more in the context of a bitter divorce, of which, of course, there are many, but that this girl was a serious witchcraft hobbyist. And then this patient of mine added that she, too, was a serious witchcraft hobbyist. That's my term. There's many different types of witchcraft. Each culture has its own. I'm naive enough that I just lump them together. You know, if somebody says they're a witch, okay, they're a witch. Then I was told that one of the residents in family medicine that I had trained the year before considered herself to be a witch. Then I was told that one of the nurses I worked with considered herself to be a witch, and I asked her about it, and she said, sure. Then I found out that at this same clinic that I mentioned earlier, where I teach part-time, a number of our patients were witches, and I was told that some of them were professional witches. And I asked, gosh, what's a professional witch? And it turns out they got paid for their services. So somebody had a lot of faith in them.
Sure.
And
now, again, for people that maybe don't have an understanding, you know, Hollywood has glamorized or deglamorized what witchcraft really is, and it's really not the, you know, voodoo blood splurting and, you know, sending nasty little magic spells at people like they show on TV. It's more about healing and a connection to Earth. Isn't that what Wicca is about,
well,
witchcraft?
Traditional,
I mean, I'm sure there's bad ones too, but
traditional witchcraft was used for healing quite a bit until about the 15 or 1600s when there was more of a taboo on it.
Mm-hmm.
But traditional ancient witchcraft was used for healing as well as for trying to manipulate forces to gain an advantage over your enemies.
Okay. But the people that you're coming in contact with weren't using witchcraft for that. They were doing it more for healing and for communion,
that,
right?
That okay. is my presumption.
All right.
Although when I asked about these so-called professional witches, I think people would pay them both to heal and to harm.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes, I think people would consult them for either thing.
Well, as a professional at this point, do you believe that if a witch puts a spell on Tim and Tim doesn't know about it, that it'll work? Or do you think it's all...
Well,
like, voodoo has to be, you know, from what I've read and seen countless times, is you have to actually have some kind of faith or fear in it for it to take hold.
The cases that I found in the medical literature did require not only that the patient who is cursed believes in the curse,
mm-hmm.
but that his social peer group also believes in the curse. In other words, in developing societies, tribal societies, when the witch doctor says you are cursed, the entire society will believe it, in addition to the person who is cursed.
Okay.
And death is quite certain, usually within 3 days.
And you think that's because of the focused amount of energy of everybody believing that they're actually willing it into existence?
Well, for physiologic reasons, Dave, that we just don't fully understand. In the middle of this process, which turns out to be reversible, if the witch doctor can be brought to return to the cursed person and say, I remove the curse, the person then gets better.
Okay.
I had told one story in the book involving a green lizard, which actually took place in an American hospital in the late 1930s, although it wasn't published until quite a number of years afterwards. A patient in an American hospital was slowly dying, losing weight, wasting away. Nobody knew why. Finally, the man's wife took the doctor aside, swore him to secrecy, and said he had an argument with a voodoo priest and he was cursed. The priest threw something in his face and said, you're going to die. And that's what's happening to him. So the doctor said to himself, okay, how will I deal with this? He took a live green lizard and smuggled it into his doctor's bag, came to the hospital to see the patient, gave the patient an injection of an emetic to make him vomit. When the man vomited, the doctor palmed the lizard out of his bag and threw it into the emesis basin and said, see, the voodoo priest threw lizard eggs into your face. this hatched into a lizard and it's been eating you alive from inside. This is your problem. You're cured. The man looked dazed, fell into a deep sleep, and woke up the next morning, and he was fine.
So it is the power of the mind more.
A belief system seemed to be part, an important part, of the cases that I could find in the medical literature.
So again, if I paid a voodoo priest to throw a spell on Tim, only
hey.
Tim didn't know about it,
hey.
And Tim McKen, my co-host here, he didn't know about it, the chances of it actually taking hold are probably a lot less than if he was a fearful person and the witch doctor threw the powder in his face.
It sounds like Tim isn't so sure.
Well, unless he could do that weight loss thing.
You know, only working from published accounts in the medical literature, I did not find any accounts of someone who was cursed unbeknownst to themselves.
Okay.
To come. All the instances that I could find in terms of documented by physicians involved somebody knowing and believing that a curse had been placed upon them.
Now, this woman that we talked about at the beginning, though, with lupus, she
yes.
went to see this witch doctor and didn't realize that a past lover had thrown this hex on her, and supposedly he removed that.
According
to So that
what,
would be a hex or a...
Well, yes, but this was her interpretation
okay.
of events, and this was actually the witch doctor's interpretation of events.
Right.
You know, she simply told the doctor what happened while she was there. So we don't know what happened except that she came back without her lupus. Whether okay. she was unknowingly cursed or whether she was simply made to believe and harness the power of her mind to overcome her disease, the way the hypnotist overcame the pain of having his abdomen opened is really unknown.
So, doctor, if we make our own reality... Okay, let's say, for example, I'm a type 2 diabetic, okay?
Okay.
Why is it that science isn't looking into the power of the mind to cure things rather than going after hard scientific fact, like the fact that my pancreas doesn't produce enough insulin, so it goes after making drugs that will force my pancreas to produce more insulin? Why not focus on what is it in the power of the mind that actually would allow me to reverse my condition?
Well... aside from the fact that nobody will make a lot of money harnessing the power of your mind, it may not be that easy to do. There is research done on the power of the mind, not only in healing the body, but in affecting cells growing in culture, you know, outside of a body, but live cells.
Mm-hmm.
But there isn't much money available for this type of research, and there isn't much encouragement to do this type of research. If you're doing research at a university and you become interested in anything vaguely paranormal, it's often a career ender. Your funding sources dry up. It's frowned upon by your colleagues.
But yet we do millions of dollars of research to check and find out what makeup will affect on a rhesus monkey's face or the sexual mating habits of an Indonesian, you know, wombat, but we won't work on things that are going to actually help humankind.
Well,
there's no money allocated for that.
Yeah, research money is not always wisely allocated.
Hmm.
One of the points I try to make in my book is that it should be acceptable to do some research into the paranormal at university institutions. It doesn't have to be 100% of the research budget, but
mm-hmm.
it's probably less than 1% now, and I think it ought to be somewhat encouraged. I think there is something valuable at the end of some of those avenues of research.
So many of the past, you know, history of illness was believed to be evil spirits or doings like that. Have you come across anybody that you thought actually was possessed and that was what was causing their ailments?
Well, I did have a chapter in the book about possession. And there were a few cases reported in the medical literature by psychiatrists of people who believed themselves to have been possessed. One was another housewife in Britain who felt that she would occasionally get possessed by the devil.
Okay.
So this would come over her, and things looked different. She reacted different. She saw things that she didn't normally see. And psychiatrists, and of course that's where she wound up in a mental institution, really couldn't come up with a diagnosis. In other words, she didn't quite fit any of the patterns of known diagnoses.
For psychosis or just...
Yeah, for psychosis.
Okay.
You know, she didn't neatly fit into something like schizophrenia or manic depressive psychosis or delirium.
Okay.
You know, she might have had some features of each thing, but she wasn't easily classifiable, nor was she easily treatable. And the physicians who wrote up the paper conclude that any treatment to be successful might have to be multidisciplinary, involving religious figures, clergy, as well as physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Another case, also from England, and incidentally, in England, they're a little bit more receptive to paranormal than we are in this country.
Sure.
In terms of the research community. So it's easier to find cases reported in the British literature than in the American literature, although they're reported in both. This was a young man in his 20s from a well-to-do family. They were of South Asian, Indian descent, but he had grown up in England. And as a teenager, he was at a picnic, and a jealous aunt, he believed, poisoned him, somehow changed things negatively by giving him something to eat.
Okay.
And he came to the attention first of the police and then to the psychiatrist who interviewed him in jail because he was a perfectly well-to-do, upstanding, middle-class citizen until this spirit would possess him. And then he was a criminal. Petty thief situation, but enough to get arrested. And he had no control. His mind essentially still knew what was happening, but he seemed to have no control over his body. So his body would be committing crimes while his mind stood by powerless to do anything about it. He claimed he could see the possessions coming in the form of a kind of a cloud that would enter his body and take over him. And in fact, while he was in jail, some of the other prisoners saw the cloud come.
Really?
Yeah, the warden and some of the prisoners. Not the psychiatrist who wasn't there at the time, but he included it in his article that at one point others actually claimed to have witnessed this. This man was treated with antipsychotic medication and had done well for at least 4 months afterwards, which was the length of time that he had been followed. So there are possession cases in the medical literature. They're bizarre. They're not well understood.
Right.
But the whole point of the book is to call our attention to things we don't understand.
Sure.
Maybe that way we'll get to understand them.
Cover a little bit of the unseen world, as we try to do on our show here, is kind of open it up and give people an alternative to what you know modern-day conventional medicine might be offering up. Well, I appreciate you being with us this evening, Doctor. It's been a pleasure having you. And again, the name of the book is The Witch in the Waiting Room, and it's A Physician Investigates Paranormal Phenomena in Medicine. The book is written by Robert S. Bobrow, B-O-B-R-O-W, and then that's MD afterwards. You can get that book just about anywhere, right? It's at all the major book sellers out there?
If they don't have it, they should be able to order it.
Okay, and you can click the link on our website as well. If you go to darknessradio.com, the show section, you can click the link, and you'll actually be able to go in there and order directly. I think it's through Amazon.com to pick up a copy of the book.
Yes, Amazon.com would have it.
Great. Well, thank you very much for joining us this evening, Doctor. We appreciate you visiting us with, here on The Darkness on the Edge of Town. And if you have some more books and follow-ups coming up, we'd love to talk to you about those as well.
Thank you very much for having me, Dave.
Have a great day.
Okay.
You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We'll be back with more in our next guest, Reverend Daniel Jennings, talking about his book, The Supernatural Occurrences of John Wesley. We'll get that right after this.
Are UFOs real? Does Bigfoot exist? Was Emily Rose really possessed? Who is the next American Idol?
She bangs! She bangs! Oh, baby, but she moves! She moves!
Thank
I'm
you.
Wasted by the way
Thank
she...
you.
We try to answer these questions and more each week on The Darkness on the Edge of Town.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
Confused on where to start with weight loss medication? See the lowest prices available with or without insurance for Wegovy, Zepbound, and more at TryLifeMD.com. 95% of LifeMD patients said starting their weight loss journey was simple. Listen to Tara's story after losing 42 pounds.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. I had gone from 237 to 195. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
Get your free insurance benefits check in minutes right now at TryLifeMD.com. Nearly 96% of patients said they would recommend the LifeMD program to anyone who wants to lose weight. Get started right now at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Target, Nike, and Instacart. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. It's easy to use, and you can get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten, Rakuten.com.
Howdy, this is Don Raleigh from Evolve Systems. Evolve Systems can't help you lose weight. We don't know anything about diamonds, and we can't help you save a boatload of money on your car insurance. What we can do is help you with your merchant processing. We work with small businesses to provide credit card processing, debit card processing, gift cards, and check acceptance. Whether you need a point-of-sale system, a credit card terminal, or want to accept payments over the internet, Evolve Systems will work with your small business to find the right solution for your merchant processing needs. Ask us how you can get a free copy of QuickBooks 2006. You can reach us at 651-628-4000 or on the internet at www.evolve-systems.com. Now you have a friend. Well, not yet, but give us a call at 651-628-4000, and we can chat. Evolve Systems, where we help you to manage change. This is Don Raleigh. Cheers.
Leave me alone!
Do you have goals?
Do you have dreams?
Do you have an interest in your name? Want to know more about the paranormal? Come and join us in Para Investigators, the 24/7 online paranormal chat. Visit us today at InfinityParanormal.com and tell us what's been keeping you up in the dark.
Missing minerals? 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's missing, naturally supporting mood, energy, and immunity. Get yours now at TraceMinerals.com. You're doing all the right things, like eating clean and staying active, but nearly all of us are still missing a key piece, minerals. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps restore what your body's not getting, supporting mood, energy, immunity, and nervous system balance. It's made from ionic trace minerals your body actually absorbs and comes in three delicious flavors, blue raspberry, blue Hawaiian, and blue acai. Because your body can't make minerals, and modern food and water don't supply enough, start with minerals. Start with Concentrace. Find it now at TraceMinerals.com.
The smell of voodoo hangs in the air. Either that or Dave and Tim had the seven bean salad for dinner.
Don't nobody go in the bathroom for about 35, 45 minutes. Somebody open the window.
Welcome back to the darkness, or whatever is hanging in the air, on the edge of town.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I'm your host, Dave Schrader, along with me, as always, my lovable and cuddly buddy, Timmy D. We've got our next guest on the line with us. His name is Reverend Daniel R. Jennings. He's an author, minister, and researcher who spent considerable time studying such diverse topics as demon possession, exorcism, Miracles Throughout History, Ancient Historical References to Werewolf Phenomena, and the Origins of Christianity. As a minister, he's preached from the pulpits of churches in the United States, Great Britain, and Mexico, and he's been featured on the radio in the U.S., Mexico, Canada, Australia, Argentina, the Virgin Islands, and New Zealand. His current book is entitled The Supernatural Occurrences of John Wesley and details the many examples of paranormal phenomena that Wesley, an 18th century Anglican, I'm going to butcher this word, I always get it stuck, Daniel, Anglican?
Yes, Anglican.
Okay, priest. And he covered everything that was recorded in his diary. These included exorcisms, miraculous healings, persons passing out during meetings, visions, and dreams. And Daniel currently resides in Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, with his wife Esmeralda. And you can learn more about him and his new book by going to www.Sean, that's S-E-A-N, multimedia.com. And that's where you can order the book as well. We have a link for it up on our website. But right now I'd like to welcome Reverend Jennings. Thank you for joining us tonight, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Appreciate having you here. Now, it seems like you've had a considerable interest in the paranormal yourself.
Well, I have. You know, when I was a little kid, every summer my mom would take us to the library. I'd check out, you know, maybe 20 or 30 paranormal books, take them home, you know, read them during the summer.
Okay.
And, you know, when I grew up, I became a minister, but I still maintained an interest in that to a certain degree.
Now, as a minister, do you run into problems or trouble with parishioners that are bothered by the fact that you, and I said parishioners, not prisoners, but parishioners that have problems with you having an interest in the occult and supernatural occurrences?
I've had some discussions with some people about it. I try to keep things balanced, you know what I mean? I try to look at things from a biblical perspective, and, you know, there's a lot of supernatural stuff in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
I try not to get involved in some areas of it. And pretty much I don't really cause any friction with it.
Well, what I've always been kind of baffled by are people that say that if you're reading up on it or learning about it, that you're, you know, in the work of the devil or doing that. But I would think that learning and enlightening yourself so that you understand exactly what you're up against would be a much better way to handle things than just going into it blind.
Right. And you have to do that. I mean, you have to know. I mean, there's nothing wrong with knowing about something.
Right.
It's when you begin to participate in things, that's when, you know, things become questionable.
Well, one of the things we mentioned first, and let's get into this before we start talking about the book, was that you've done quite a bit in ancient historical references to werewolf phenomena. What exactly have you found out about werewolves?
Well, there's actually several references, and if you look at these ancient references, you'll see that the theories are the same as today. There were people in the ancient world who believed that there were people that turned into wolves. There were people who believed that it was a mental illness, like today. And if I remember correctly, there were people that believed there was something spiritual, something demonic about it, some type of form of demon possession. There's an ancient historian, Herodotus. He talks about the place in Greece, or somewhere near Greece, where the people would actually turn into wolves. There's a couple of lost references that are lost works that are referred to in other works that talk about this group of people. Then there's a doctor. His name was, I believe, Sidetes Mathes, and he referred to it as a mental illness. So, you know, several references to that back then.
Now, when they were talking about people turning into wolves, they weren't talking about the Lon Chaney Jr. werewolf, where it was standing on two legs and bipedal and chasing people around, eating them, right? They were turning into an actual four-legged wolf.
Right. It seems more like it was an actual, you know, you would look at it, it would look just like any wolf.
All right. Fair enough. Now, let's talk about your new book, The Supernatural Occurrences of John Wesley. Let's get a little history. Who is John Wesley, and why is it so important to talk about the supernatural occurrences in his life?
Okay. John Wesley, he's an Anglican priest from the 18th century. He's remembered best for being the founder of the Methodist Church. Worldwide, there's some 70 million people are members of churches trace their roots directly back to him. And on top of that, there's another 100 million in the Pentecostal faith tradition that would also trace their roots back to him. So he's probably one of the most well-known historical figures from the 18th century. You know, the impact that he made is still felt and appreciated by, you know, almost 200 million people the world over. You know, I went to John Wesley College, and you know, there was a heavy influence of his teachings and references to him there. So he, you know, he's a pretty big guy. He's got quite a history to him, and pretty well known today. Although the supernatural side of his ministry, I discovered, seems by and large to have been forgotten. You know, I got a copy of his diary and a copy of most of the other works he had written. They had been published in the 1800s, and then now you can get them on CD-ROM. I got that in the 90s, and as I began to study his diary and his other writings, I realized that he had a lot of experiences that they don't really talk about anymore, but I thought they were really interesting, and I thought that it would be encouraging if people could read about them all in, you know, one small book.
All right. Now going forward, what kind of occurrences were you... Now, one of the things that blew me away was that this guy was almost like he had a religious shield around him. People that would do or say horrible things about him would actually die. Some of them died on the spot. Wasn't that the story?
Yes. He had... And in order to understand that, you have to kind of understand the context a little bit. At that time, you've got... you know, he's an Anglican priest, and that was kind of the official church in England at the time. And it still is today, actually. But they had a certain way of doing things, and they liked their services held one way. They liked their preaching style one way. And Wesley began to do things a little different. You know, for example, he was really concerned about the people that didn't go to church. So what he would do is he would go out in the street, and he would just begin to preach out loud out in the street. And things like that got him in trouble with the established church because, I don't know why, but they thought that preaching should only be done inside of a church, that it was completely wrong to do it outside of a church. So what you had was you had ministers that actually began to preach sermons against him, actually tried to ruin his reputation. They would pay people to riot at his services, things like that.
That's funny because it's almost similar to like the stories in the Bible when Jesus would go and he would sit at the table with the hookers and the tax collectors and the bad people, and people would think he was nuts for doing that, and he should be sitting with the pious and the priests and the higher-ups of the church community if he was so important. But his point was bringing the story and bringing it out to the people in the streets, right?
Exactly. And as we look at history, we kind of see that what happened with Jesus and the Pharisees, that happens, you know, time and time again. It's like a cycle. You have the established religious people, and they've kind of grown cold and unspiritual and in their duties. And then you have some new guy that, you know, God brings on the scene, and he comes to return people to the roots. And he gains a lot of followers outside the church, but inside the church, he makes a lot of enemies. And it happens, you know, over and over and over and over again as the centuries have gone on.
Okay. So now he starts having his own supernatural occurrences. And can you kind of walk us through a little bit of a brief history of his life and the different types of supernatural occurrences he had happen?
Sure. He's a very interesting individual. He is a prolific writer. He writes almost 250 books. He is a scientist. He studies, for example, the use of electricity for medicinal purposes. He is a songwriter. He writes several hymns. He travels roughly 5,000 miles a year, preaching all over, you know, basically over the Great Britain area because that's where he lived. But he did do some travels, I believe, to Holland, to the Germany area. And as he ministered, he had many experiences. You know, as we read the Bible, we see. There's lots of supernatural things in the Bible. You know, there's demon possession, exorcism, miraculous healing, things like that. And, you know, Wesley, he had quite a few instances of demon possession where he healed people that were possessed by demons. He had probably, I found 14 or 15 cases of miraculous healing that ranged anywhere from him and a group of people would pray for someone to be healed. Perhaps he would just pray by himself. And the situation, the illness would go away. And even one instance I thought was kind of strange, but a woman came to him, I believe at one of his services, and she said, "I just know if you'll touch my cheek, I'll be healed of the disease I have." And even he says in his diary, you know, that he thought that was a little strange, but he went ahead and touched her cheek. And sure enough, she said from that moment, she was healed of the disease that she had.
Unbelievable. So he was a healer as well.
Right, okay. Yeah, and I guess, yeah, in a sense you could say that.
All right. Now, what about, you know, dealing with the exorcisms and the darker side of things? What all was he, what were his abilities and what was he able to do?
Well, he had, there were several cases, about 14 or 15 in the book, and for the most part, they all resemble, you know, the traditional biblical understanding of what a demon-possessed person is. You know, the person maybe would be raving mad at times, they would be blasphemous, they would talk in the third person, and Wesley and his other people, you know, they knew that the only way, their only source of power was through through Christ, and so they would go and they would pray for these people, and I believe in every case, they eventually, they always saw improvement, and generally they always saw like a complete improvement that was long-lasting. In some cases, they had to go back and pray for the person several times. There's one case I remember in particular that I believe the woman, they were talking about four or five men couldn't hold her on the bed. I mean, she was so crazy and or acting so crazy. And as they prayed for her, she kind of just sits straight up in the bed. He says in his diary, not like sitting up, but like the whole body rigid like a ruler, just kind of supernaturally raises up and is kind of, I guess, standing on the bed. And there's another woman, her name was Elizabeth. He goes quite into detail about her, how she would see these demon spirits that would appear to her. They would try to control her decisions. They told her who she could and could not marry. They told her to take care of a certain person's children. They wanted her to get involved in a lawsuit against the relatives. And finally, after, I believe, several months of praying for her, they were finally able to see her delivered and all those manifestations stopped. The interesting thing about that is that the woman that was affected by that, she was not the only one to witness it. Another woman, I believe she was a servant that worked at the house, she also noticed something strange one day.
Now, as a reverend yourself, do you believe that possession actually takes place?
Yes, definitely.
What, I mean, is it always demonic? Is it just walk-ins, or is it more, I guess I should say this, in current day society, back through the ages, has it been more mental problems, or has it been more actual demonic possession that's gone on?
Well, it's probably a combination. There's clearly, and even the Bible talks about this, that there's clearly mental illness in the world. You know, for example, there are people have chemical deficiencies. They their brain just doesn't produce the right chemical, and it makes them act a little strange. But I believe that there are cases where there really is a supernatural entity that comes into the person and affects their behavior. A lot of times we think that the person's going to be like rolling on the ground, foaming at the mouth, things like that. And I believe that happens, but I also know that from my experience, counseling people, dealing with them, probably the most common form of demon possession, you can't really immediately tell it. The person is leading a normal life. The person you know, maybe has a family, holds down a job, and has children, but they have an intense inner turmoil with their thought life that is the root of it is in some type of demonic problem. I guess you
doesn't that
like
kind of follow? I mean, and I'm not trying to call you out on this, Reverend, but sure, that seems to fall into just about everybody's life at this point. You know, I mean, I have a pretty basic life. You know, I've got a wife, kids, the radio show, a real-life job, you know, and things seem okay on the outside. But there's, you know, we all have our own little, I guess, coin the phrase, demons that we're all dealing with. Does that mean it's a demonic possession kind of thing that's going on? Because at this point in history, I don't know anybody that doesn't have some kind of issues that are going on that seem to be leading them down wrong paths.
Right. Well, in the sense of, you know, we all have negative thoughts, and negative thoughts, you know, obviously it can come from ourselves. I need to clarify that, I guess. Negative thought, you know, having negative thoughts would not be possession. Possession would be where the person was actually under control of the demon. You know, a person can come under attack from you know, demons can put negative thoughts in people's minds. But I'm kind of thinking more along the lines of a person that's led to commit suicide from these negative thoughts. Not just a person that has negative thoughts, but a person that cannot, you know, can't really cope because the thoughts are so overwhelming.
Well, let me ask you about that. That brings up an interesting question. People that are led because of demonic interference and are made to feel so hopeless that they commit suicide. Now, we're all taught from an early age on that suicide is a sin and you'll go to hell for it. Now, if there's interference that way, demonic interference that's talking you down like that, does that put you in the same category, do you think? Or is it just, if you were kind of pushed down that road, you can't, you know, you're not going to be held responsible for it.
Well, that's a question. That's a deep question, and I really don't know how to answer it. Obviously, we would encourage people to try not to go down that road, and if they're feeling depressed, to get some help. So we don't want to see anybody commit
suicide. Definitely, right.
But ultimately, I think it's something that's in God's hands, and he's going to judge that himself.
All right, that's fair enough. Now, real quickly, I'd alluded at the beginning of the deal, one of the stories that you tell in the story is about when John Wesley was out preaching and people were speaking against him and they were actually struck dead, correct? I mean, what was that? How did that work out?
Well, I had about five or six cases where he records enemies, some of them ministers. They met some pretty unusual fates. One of them, probably the most well-known one that kind of made it around the grapevine in his day, was there was a Mr. a Reverend Weston, and while he was preaching a sermon, he was kind of struck with paralyzed and fell back from the pulpit, and some men were able to catch him before he actually hit the ground, but he died, I believe, about 1 or 2 weeks after that. Another enemy, an enemy actually, the guy he tried to disrupt one of the services. He ends up about a week or two later hanging himself and committing suicide. Another person he came to one of the meetings. He was going to, yell some things to disturb the meeting. He lost his voice and wasn't able to speak. And another guy, he actually was going to disturb that same meeting, I believe, and he developed a pain in his body, and the pain was so bad that he actually sent a message to John Wesley asking him to pray for him that the pain would go away.
So the enemy was calling on his enemy to get some help, huh?
Exactly, yeah.
Interesting. Well, you're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is Reverend Daniel R. Jennings, and we're talking about his book, The Supernatural Occurrences of John Wesley. And according to the blurb about it, it says the world over has some 175 million Christians that attend churches whose roots can be traced back to the ministry of an Anglican priest named John Wesley. These include the Methodists, Nazarenes, Pentecostals, Wesleyans, and Charismatics. However, most of these people know very little about the amazing power that was demonstrated in the life of this humble and Christ-like individual. Here, for the first time in as much as 250 years, read the accounts from Wesley's own journal, in which he records demons being cast out through the power of Christ, individuals falling down, slain in the spirit while he preached, supernatural visions, dreams, and cases of miraculous healings from his own day. Also included are Wesley's interpretation of the baptism of the Holy Spirit, his opinion on how to appropriately view miracles, and the final word from Wesley on whether or not he had the gift of tongues. The book is out and available. You can go and get it at seanmultimedia.com, and we'll have a link up for that right on our website at darknessradio.com, and that's Sean, S-E-A-N, multimedia.com. Very affordable, too, Reverend Jennings. Only $7.95 plus $2 shipping and handling to get the book, and it's a great read.
Thank you.
Well, I thank you very much for joining us here this evening, and hopefully we can have you back as you do more books. We'd love to hear about it. Talk to you about some of the other topics that you've covered as well. You're listening to The Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. We thank you for joining us this evening, and we'd like to thank our guests for being here with us as well. Make sure to tune in again with us next week. We've got a brand new show coming up for you. Also, join us out in the chat room, or you can join us in the live chat at Infinity Paranormal. Thanks again. We'll talk to you soon.
You eat well, you work out, but did you know 99% of Americans are still mineral deficient? That's where Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder comes in. It's your daily foundation for better mood, natural energy, immune support, and nervous system balance. Formulated from nature and backed by science, it's a simple habit that makes a big impact. Because your body doesn't make minerals, and today's food and water don't supply enough, with Concentrace, you'll feel the difference. Go to TraceMinerals.com and start with minerals. Start with Concentrace. feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to TraceMinerals.com and feel the difference minerals make. Feel off, tired, moody? You might be missing minerals because 99% of us are. Concentrace Daily Mineral Powder helps support energy, mood, and immunity from the inside out. Go to TraceMinerals.com and feel the difference minerals make.